Recording now.
So we left off last week. We were talking about the bracha of Bona, and we realized that although the primary scenario of Bona refers to a structure, to a building, there was, of course, a whole discussion about a binyan b'kelim, particularly making a kli mechadash. And then we branched out to the end of the shiur about even a potential issue of Bona on food. And the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, in the 10th parak, quotes a braisa. It speaks about being Megabin. A person makes cheese on Shabbos. So Megabin is Chayiv. It's Mr. Deraisa to make cheese on Shabbos. And strangely enough, the Malach that the Gemara identifies it with is the Malach of Baina that you, I think I commented at the end of the Shia last week about my limited knowledge about making cheese. So basically, when you cause this cheese to be formed, so you're causing a structure, you're causing something, different smaller pieces to be combined together to make a larger structure, brick-like kind of a thing. So that will be a malacha deraisa of Goyim. But there is a fascinating question that Tosis raises in light of the fact that Magavin is Chai Mishum Bona. Tosis applies this sugya to Hilchos Yomtiv. You know, the Hilchos Yomtiv, you know, the Torah permits us to do Echol Nefesh and Yomtiv. And then in addition to doing Echol Nefesh proper, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Beitzah that you're allowed to do certain things that are not even actual Echol Nefesh. Let's say, for example, you're allowed to carry a shofar on Yontif, you're allowed to carry a lulav on Yontif, you're allowed to push a baby carriage on Yontif. Why are you allowed to do these things? So there's a Machlekes Beishama Beisilu, whether you're even allowed to do these things. According to the view of Beishama, you're in fact not allowed to do these things because you're allowed to carry for food on Yontif, you're not allowed to carry for other needs on Yontif. According to Beishama, that would be an Issa Min HaTorah to carry Shol Tzech HaChol Nefesh. And Beisilu Batir, Beisilu say it's permissible to carry all these things on Yontif. Mitoch Shehutra Hotzol Tzarech, Hutra Namishol Tzarech. Since the Torah permits carrying on Yontif for Echol Nefesh, it permits carrying for other things as well. This is a very, very important Machlekes Rashi and Tosfos, not our sugya right now. Did Beis Hillel mean to say that you're allowed to carry for anything whatsoever, even not even for a reason, just stop for kicks, you're allowed to carry on Yontif? It was Rashi's view. Tosfos limits Beis Hillel. Tosfos says, it has to be a Torah Chayom. All the examples that the Mishnah gives, it's a lulav, it's a shofar, it's a baby, it's a Torah, things that are going to enhance the Yontif. Stam for no reason whatsoever would still be awesome. But no matter what you think about that, everybody agrees that there is a certain principle of, I mean, not everybody Bishami disagrees with, but we pass the Chavisilo, that there is a principle of mitoch. So although in the Gemara itself, mitoch does not appear by all the malachas of Echol Nefesh, it does appear by a few. It definitely appears by Otzah, it appears by Havara, and the Gemara appears a little bit more, the Rambam has a little bit less, but the concept of mitoch definitely appears somewhere. And Tosfos has the start of mitoch when it comes to the malach of bona as well. Why is that? It says Tosfos, let's say if you would want to know, am I permitted to make cheese on yomtiv? I want to have cheese on yomtiv. Would anybody say it's also to make cheese on yomtiv? It's chaychol nefesh. In chaychol nefesh go to mizat. So the truth is that there may be problems with the rabbanon of making cheese on yomtiv. That's the whole sugya about if it's efshim be od yom that I could have done it before yomtiv. Those are technical details, but min haTorah, it's probably okay to make cheese on yomtiv because it's a chol nefesh. If that's the case, it tells us once we've identified that there is a quote unquote violation of malachas bona that the Torah permits, let's plug in the same formula. Mitoch shehutra bona l'tzarech. Since the assumption of Tosfos is that it's permissible to make cheese on Yontif, so it's mutter to do cheese making, which is a violation of Bona, and that's okay. It should be mutter to build your house on Yontif. Why can't I do construction on Yontif? We have so much trouble trying to get the construction guys to stop working on Yontif. Says Tosfos, forget about the goyim work. We should do it ourselves. Why not? What's the problem? So Tosfos dug up a Gemara Maseches Beit that says you can't build a house on Yom Kippur. That's a given. So Tosfos says, in one place, a startling answer. Tosfos says, you know what? Maybe that's only a Chumah Midrabbanim. Maybe Midrash you're allowed. Maybe you're Nochidami. Maybe Taka Min HaTorah you're allowed to build a house on Yom Kippur because Mitoch Shehutra Boni Al Tzorach Asiyas Gvina Hutanami Shelo Tzorach for other Tzorachim as well. Very, very startling, Tosfos. So again, it's not going to make that much of a difference because it's still also a drabbanon because it looks like chol, whatever it is. So we're not no one's really, really saying you can build a house on Yontif, but Tosfos knocks it down to a potential drabbanon. So the Pnei Yeshua has a kash against Tosfos. Yeshua thinks that maybe this chesh of Tosfos is not correct. like that. It says the Bnei Yeshua, making cheese that is going to be a real malacha of bona, that means I'm making cheese that it's going to, I'm making the cheese and I'm going to store this cheese for the next 6 months. So that's like a building. I built this tremendous edifice, I built a structure of cheese. Person makes cheese and eats it 10 minutes later. There was this is like something we spoke about, making the tents, opening the umbrellas. These are very, very chick-chack, very, very quick, you know, come-and-go types of buildings. They're not really binyan, at least on the level of the araisa. Therefore, says the Bnei Yeshua that the building of cheese-making that would be the araisa would only be if you're building it for a significant amount of time. It says the Bnei Yeshua, in Cain, there's no case of the otherwise violation of bona being mutar anyam, because it's b'manushach. If you are building the cheese for eating now, that's not really called malachas bina. If you're building the cheese for 6 months from now, you're not allowed to do that on yontif, because you're only allowed to do yontif for yontif things. So that's a pretty sure. There is no case. I'm like carrying. Carrying is a malacha. Whether I'm doing it for now, moving for later, I'm not allowed to carry on Shabbos. It comes to Torah and says, you're allowed to carry on yontif for ochel nefesh. Oh, mitach shehutra, tzol etzay, ruchel dam shel etzay. What's it, lighting a fire? So why? With the raisa, if I throw a log into the fire on Shabbos, that's it. It's a deraisa. It comes to Torah and says you can throw a log into the fire in order to barbecue, in order to cook on it. Oh, mitoch shutra avar letzaruch u'dinam shlo letzaruch. But to say mitoch shutra binyan, says the Pereshu, we have a good term after binyan. The only kind of cheese making that would be mutter min haTorah is if you make it to eat right away. But that's not called binyan, because that's not called binyan. If you do similar to that on Shabbos, you wouldn't be chayav, because that's a binyan aroi. So there is no case of bina and yontif. That's the Torah's hitira. In order for it to kick in, the rule of mitar. So lom this from the place.
Can't you also be mechalik just by saying that mitoch, even if you apply mitoch, it has to be for tzarchei hayom, right? Meaning, if you're building a house, it's not for tzarchei hayom. So cheese, you could say it theoretically it's tzarchei hayom. You're going to eat it. What's the tzarchei hayom to build a house?
Okay. So again, let's say maybe I overdid it with the house. And there are other kind of tzrochim, there are other kind of small-term bonas that could possibly be done. And maybe it would be the tzrochim, maybe it would enhance the yom. So I'll ask a question to the people from our Torah on the Shiur. This is a trivia question. This goes back. I'm looking on some of the faces or the names on the screen. Probably, see, a few of you were not even in our Torah back in those days. I don't know who can really ask it. This was a Shiur that was given on Shmini Atzeres. It was back probably well over 10 years ago. It had to do with a major security breach in the shul. The old days, what was a security breach in the shul? Is that probably the doorknob on the back door or something broke. I don't know. The door going out of the kitchen, going out to the outside. So there was some, a whole doorknob broke or something over here. And we couldn't get that door, open. So what's the tremendous problem? The problem was really one security breach, there was a special safety issue in Simchas Torah. So those who know what the numbers of our Torah used to look like, I'm not talking about this past Simchas Torah, but in the old days, it was Torah in its heyday. So I don't want to say how many people were in the building at any given time, but it was a lot. So there was a concern apparently about having the proper amount of exit that would be functioning because one of the exits, I'm trying to figure out what the cheshbon was, that we're trying to count out the exits of the different ways to get out of the building. You know, chalila chalila, there would have to be an emergency exit plan. So the problem is that one of the exits led directly from a house, goes right into the sukkah. So we felt that wasn't really you can't get hundreds of people even out that door because it bumped right, smashed right into the sukkah. So that exit was knocked out. And then there was, again, I don't even remember all the cheshbonis were, but we felt that it wasn't the greatest idea to have this major exit to the shul to be non-functioning over Yom Tov. So the question was, can we have a non-Jew come and actually fix it? It involved unscrewing the doorknob, putting the door back in. There's a whole series of different potential malachas that were involved. Would that be sufficient grounds to be a matadist, to be matad Amir Yaakov? So I took the opportunity to give a whole share about it. In the end, we're a matter anyway, because I felt that whatever it's called, the Hezekiah Rabin, we're very, very making. Well, Yaakov, Hezekiah Rabin, there are a lot of potential coups involved. But here, I wanted to give up a little bit of a lumpish twist at the time, that maybe there was no deraisa involved altogether. maybe to have a non-Jew fix the doorknob may not be a malacha deraisa. Why is it not a potential malacha deraisa? Because maybe the malacha involved was a shah malacha boina. And according to this Taisa about making cheese, but according to Taisa shtikla tarva, making cheese was only a yontif, wasn't a Shabbos. So maybe when it comes to making cheese, so maybe we could argue that if making cheese is mutter, again, that's the pressure, if making cheese is mutter minatara and yontif, and we could say mitoch on yontif, so meikra, and then you can mamish build houses on yontif. Elitz and nisad derabanan. So when it comes to nisad derabanan, a shvus to shvus to ask a goy to do a nisad derabanan, but mokum tzorchi mitzvah tzorchi rabim is very, very lenient. So I threw that in as an extra bonus in terms of the shia. It was put there anyway for other grounds. But I remember at the time that it was the, believe it or not, that making cheese on yontif would be the mat that fixed the oratora doorknob by the goy on shmini atzeres. Am I correct? Anyone remember? Any of the old timers remember that shia? A long time ago, could be before maybe everyone remember. early.
Don't remember. Sorry, I can't say I remember.
Okay, it's been a long time ago. Okay, good. Back to the story. So this iser, at least making the cheese would be a misogynia. Different circumstances. So the question is, what other possible applications could this have? The Megabeh, what could this actually speak to us in terms of a Shabbos? So there was a discussion in the Gedalia Poskim, again, I stole a little bit off the grabs now, about the making of sushi on Shabbos. He said, should that be a problem making sushi? So some had it in against making the sushi on Shabbos. They felt like you're building, you're taking a piece of, taking some rice and you're connecting it together with your seaweed, with your grilled salmon inside, whatever your fresh salmon, your California rolls, whatever, spicy tuna, whatever, something like that. And it's now a whole structure, it's a whole surah, it's now a whole entity. So maybe that should be a problem with Baina. That was a Shaila. So many poskim thought that wasn't really Baina. Back and forth, is that really considered to be a binyan? It's such a temporary kind of thing. It falls apart. Pick it up with your, I'm not a big chopsticks kind of a guy. Pick it up with my fork and the whole thing falls apart. So it's not so clear that's even considered to be a Baina altogether. But according to the Machmirin, that some wanted to say that would be a problem, that had a whole impact on the caterers. You can't have the guys making the sushi rolls for you. So if you hold this a deraisa, it's Amir Yakum. You can't even have a non-Jew do it for you. So again, I'm not a, I enjoy sushi, but I don't have a clue how to make sushi. So if I find myself in a kiddush, in the old days when people go to kiddushes, and if the non-Jews are being makel to make sushi, they're relying on the hashkachas that most hashkachas are makel on the shayla. So I'll eat it also. I don't consider it to be a shayla ma'aseh Shabbos. That far we're willing to be makel. That eat the sushi that was made on Shabbos. I very rarely eat sushi on Shabbos, but altogether, even the sushi was made from beforehand. But I'll share with you it was today's Shaila. It's a little bit of a veering off of our bonus here, but sushi, hold the Osli Yad, the name of Milsa, Matai Shtikl Torah. Today, I ate sushi. Today, very, very unlikely that I very, very rarely that I eat sushi on Shabbos. I might say, yesterday afternoon, say, I bought a small thing of sushi yesterday, and I don't know, this guy, Ladvarm, I never ended up eating it. So it got stuck in the fridge. So this morning when we finished davening, my minion, we davened, but by 9:30 I was all done. So usually what I've been doing these weeks, I learned for a little bit, taking a walk, it was raining today. And then usually I make kiddush by about 11:30. We have, we make Suda Shniya just before Chatos and Shine. That's usually what my Seder and Hadvarim has been for the last couple of Shabbosos. The issue, not a problem, it's a good thing. The good thing was that there was a bris today. Someone in our shul made a bris this morning by outdoor bris. I mean, the bris was indoors, everyone else was standing outdoors. So the bris was called for 11:45. So I made a quick cheshbon that's going to throw off my schedule in terms of my suda. So I was trying to figure out, what should I do? I try to be makbid, those poskim will say, should try to eat suda shni before chatzos. Those were not makbid for that, so just make kiddush and then go to the bris and come home at 12:15 and eat lunch. I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to really have suda before. On the other hand, I was outvoted by other people in the family that we're not going to have a full chill and the whole full meal at 9:30 in the morning. So I had to scrounge around. So I figured I'll make suda shniyah. So I'll make it early suda shniyah, and then shayin. And then after the bris is over, after chatzos, I'll have my suda shlishis, which will be basically lunch. So I was looking around, what to have suda shniyah with. So all of a sudden, min hashamayim, I looked in the fridge and I saw a container of sushi.
That's sushi, Rabbi. That was a man.
But it was the man. So, and it was even Yossi the Zoyer, because it was the salmon sushi. So it was fish. So my mom says, Yossi, even though I have to be honest that I don't think Reb Shuba Yochai the Zohar thought that, but he said you have to fish on Shabbos. I don't think he had in mind sushi, but we're still Yaitzin, the Indian of having fish on Shabbos.
Anyway, so we'll have a problem with anything that we dice, right?
What do you mean?
If you cut pineapple into squares, you are building. You have a building.
Oh, wait a second. Oh, not so simple. So the post can point out that based on this Gemara about Megabim, one should be careful not to build structures and shapes out of foods. You know, Finami, that like sometimes you go to these kiddushes and they have like a whole shape of watermelon or something, shaped like Noah's cave. I don't know. They have all these funny shapes of stuff, of different food things. So those should not be being done on Shabbos. Those should be prepared before Shabbos. You're allowed to cut something, it's a little piece, that's okay. But if you're cooking, if you're cutting it in a nice way, then it should look like a person, something. It should look like a structure, like a building. So that would be a potential problem. Plus, can point out another possible application of boina, not really foods, but it's the same idea as megabin. Ram describes it. The reason why megabin is chaim shuboina is because you're taking the little pieces and you're merging them, making them all into one big structure together. The post can talk about making snowballs on Shabbos. There's a chashash of boina. There are multiple shilas of playing with snow on Shabbos. The first and foremost shilas is there an issue of mukta? So that's a shila. So the Gemara in Erevin talks about rain. Rain falls on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that's not considered to be mukta. That's something no one, even though one could have argued that it just came into existence. And one thinks, no, it's really all there. It's in the clouds. It's ready. It's not really considered to be a new entity. So rain that falls is not considered to be a noilet or mukta. So Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva, but he thinks that's only true about rain. It's rain, you could drink. So the rain falls down, you drink the water. So it's royal cast snow. So what do you do with snow? Wonder, well, what could you possibly use snow for? Who's eating snow? Who's drinking snow? So that wouldn't...
Use it for drinks, Rabbi.
Oh, wait, we'll get there in a second. So Moshe writes, he thinks that snow is mukta mamish. You can't move snow for anything. We've spoken in the past about it. You'll shovel the snow. Those are extra, extra halachic concerns. They're halachic concerns, but they're above and beyond the regular rules. Namely, basically, Moshe says snow is mukta. And then you have to figure out, is there some kind of a hetta, mishum hezek, mishum hefsek, or things of that nature. But others question Ramayisha. Others say, wait a second, who says that snow is not usable? He says that snow is very usable. It's very drinkable. I remember when my kids were little. They used to go outside on a good, nice snowy day, go to the backyard, scoop up a thing of snow and put some grape juice into it, and they had grape ices. So people used to do that. So I think the teretz is, that's Ramayisha L'shitaso and my kids L'shitaso. Ramayisha lived on the FDR drive. He lived on the Lower East Side. You would never go outside the FDR drive and scoop up some of the snow. You live in Bergenfield, a beautiful backyard full of the snow. It's clean and pristine and wonderful. So why not? Why can't you avail yourself of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's brie and drink a little bit of frozen snow? That's going to happen to you. Yeah, I'm not advocating my kids Baruch Hashem have outgrown it, but that was a famous treat back in the old days. So again, even if you hold that the snow is not mukta, but the place came right, that to make a snowball is a problem. Because you're forming together the different things to make into a structure, into a ball, that's a problem. If they want to make a snowman, that would also pose a problem. Your mom's building a bubachella, your mom's making a snowman, that would for sure be a problem as well. There is it's almost like a little bit of a humorous question, but not so posh with the answer to the question. It's a little bit of a humorous question that the Haredim ask. And when the Gemara says that making cheese is boina, so the reverse question is, that how come eating cheese isn't so sir? Whatever is bona, the opposite of bona is soser. So if I break down a building, smash down a building, that's called soser. So eating cheese, a new chumash should be called nisso soser. So obviously it can't be a deraisa because a sos has to be a livnos in order to be deraisa. It has to be demolishing something in order to refix it. I'm not even going to go down that route. Anyone who's eating cheese is not going to turn that cheese back into cheese again. But we won't.
So we don't say the same thing by tochein. We don't say by any of the malachs when you eat something that it's part of the. But if you eat food, you're not going to think you're tochein.
Oh, right. Oh, very good. Excellent. So it was probably on the correct answer that somehow achila is the antithesis of malacha. That it can't be that a maisa, whatever concept of maisa achila, by definition cannot be a malacha. So that's probably part of the answer, maybe the whole answer to the question. That's a good moshul. I wasn't even thinking the tochein moshul was probably correct. Now, when I chew my food, so that's anuchom, you can't chew your food in Shabbos. Anuchom, because of tochein, that's absurd. like the Moshe, there's a Chumash Rosh that talks about doing bayrer in your mouth. If a person is drinking something, and by drinking it, so he's in a way that he's separating the process of drinking proper. So that's not really called derech bayrer. That's called Moshe. Enuch derech achiv gold mizeh. So that's probably part of the statement there also, that the act of eating somehow cannot be. There's almost like a stira, an internal contradiction between the notion of eating and something being derech malacha. So a kopanim, there is bona, obviously by structures, there is bona by kalim to some degree, depending on what you think about the last week's year, and there is a certain degree of bona by foods related things as well. So we continue with lach of bona to a different aspect of bona. That's a sugya that also appears in the 10th parak Masechta Shabbos. And the Gemara talks about if a person has a dirt floor in their house, so then certain things that they do with the dirt may be a potential problem of bina. Why is that? Because the any given dirt floor, there are some holes. The dirt is not so even, not necessarily all the same area. And if a person moves around the dirt a little bit, so he may end up filling up holes, he may have to make new holes, and any of that kind of stuff is a potential malach of bina. The Gemara says that when you even the ground, or you uneven the ground, different things that you do in terms of changing the landscaping of the ground, if you're in a house, that would be malach of bona. If you're out in the field, then it could be a potential malach of chayrish. So chayrish is plowing. So plowing is lav dafka going with an animal with a plow. Anything that you improve or change a little bit the landscape is a malach of chayrish if it's part of a planting kind of an area. So we're assuming that in your living room, you're not going to be planting, but it's a dirt floor. So then that would be a potential problem of bina. So in that light, the Gemara quotes a machlokes at Tanoim about meravets. Apparently the practice was when the dirt floor would get dirty with other things. So you wanted to they would pour water onto the floor a little bit, onto the dirt. So that would clean things up, wash things, but whatever exactly did. So meravets was a common practice. The Gemara quotes a machlokes at Tanoim. You're allowed to do meravets on Shabbos. So one time I thought that's a potential issur deraisa. And then the Gemara concludes that we pass in that not as an honest deraisa, not even a derabban, it's butl chetchila. Why do we pass it's butl chetchila? The Gemara says it falls into the category of a davishen miskavet. But when I'm pouring some water onto the ground, just to clean things up a little bit, so I'm not necessarily intending, I'm not planning on changing the ground level. There's a chance that it may happen. It's possible by pouring a little bit of water that may move around some of the dirt, may fill up a hole, make a new hole, etc. Those things are always within the realm of possibility, but as long as I'm not intending on doing that, so they fall under the category of Dabar Shem Miskaven. And Dabar Shem Miskaven, we already know, of course, is Mutar Lechatchilu. We follow Rabbi Shimon. That's why you're allowed to direct chairs, things of that nature. So the Gemara paskins lahalacha that you're really allowed to do the act of Meravetz. But then in the middle of the Sugya, the Gemara quotes another process called Mechabet. Mechabet does not mean that I'm pouring water. Mechabet means I'm literally taking a broom and mamash moving the dirt and sweeping up the floor. Mechabet. So the Gemara quotes the same question. There are some opinions that said the Mechabet is asur. It's a shayla v'bayna. But on that, the Gemara never says pamali that it's okay. The Gemara says explicitly that Meravetz is okay. And call it a day, and the Gemara kind of leaves it hanging about Mechavet. So this was a big, big machlokes of Rishonim. What did the Gemara mean to conclude or not to conclude? So some Rishonim say, no, it's all the same thing. It's all the same Davar Shem Miskaved. You can hide by Davar Shem Miskaved. Everything's hunky dory. Everything's great. It was wonderful. You could sweep the floor. Again, we're talking about, meanwhile, dirt floors. I didn't say a word yet about our wooden floors or other kinds of floors. I'm talking first about dirt floors. So the many Rishonim say, even though the Gemara doesn't say explicitly that Mechavet is mutter, it's okay. It's also fine. If Meravitz is mutter, if Mechabit is mutter, and nothing to worry about. And other Rishonim say, no, the Gemara doesn't say it, So the question is, so why didn't the Gemara say it? So he had the Rishonim part ways, assuming it's a problem. Again, you have the Rishonim say it's not a problem. But assuming it is a problem, why should it be a problem? So some Rishonim say it's a problem of Baina. That's what we're talking about tonight. That means you're, unlike Meravitz, which is unlikely you're going to change anything, Mechabit is much more likely, and it's closer to the category of a psikresha. And psikresha is a problem on Shabbos. So some of the Rishonim say that it's asur, and it's also mishum bayna. And other Rishonim say, no, it's asur, but not mishum bayna. It's also mishum other reasons. What are the other reasons? Because sweeping is going to involve other violations of Shabbos, nothing to do with bayna. For that matter, nothing to do with malacha either. It has to do with muktzah.
And none of them has mitkaven.
What?
None of these things that people do, the results are not mitkaven to be
that. The problem is if it's a psik reisha, if it's very, very likely it's going to happen, that becomes a problem. So that's what some Rishonim say, that Merabit is less likely that anything's going to change on the ground. Mechabit is much, much likelier. And in order to be a psik reisha, it doesn't have to be 100%, according to many, even a rogue, even if it's a better than 50% chance it's going to lead to the melacha, that can run into the problem of being a psik reisha. So again, so we have three different possibilities. So some say it's takamotor, others say it's also b'shot psik reisha bona. And then there's the third group of Rishonim that say that it's also, but for a different reason, the issue is mishum muktzah. What's the muktzah? The muktzah is that if you're sweeping the floor, inevitably there are dirty things on the floor. There's a lot of junk on the floor. You're sweeping away chicken bones and orange peels and all kind of things that are on the floor that are not roi lachil anymore. So all those things are muktzah. So you're in violation of moving muktzah. So that's the third possibility. So again, three possibilities, what the maskaras advarim is about sweeping. Either sweeping is just mutter, the same as pouring water on, or sweeping is taka also because of psik reisha, or sweeping is also for other technical reasons. There's a Gemara that led a whole group of Rishonim to say that it's also, the Gemara has a phrase that when it speaks about brooms on Shabbos, the Gemara seems to say that brooms are mukta. Brooms are not literally mukta, but at least a klishim lach del yisr. So klishim lach del yisr means that, let's say a pencil, a hammer, it was a kalim, that are used for Dvar Masurim B'Shabbos. So whenever you have a Kli Shem Lach Bel Yisr, there are limitations on when you're allowed to move it. So the Gemara seems to treat brooms as Kli Shem Lach Bel Yisr. So that led a group of Rishonim to conclude, oh, it must be that it's also to sweep the floor in Shabbos. And other Rishonim said, no. That Gemara was following the Tanoim who say you're not allowed to sweep on Shabbos, like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds Dvar Shem Miskaven is also on Shabbos. So according to those Tanoim who say that you're not allowed to sweep, then the broom is taka a Kli Shem Lach Bel Yisr. We who paskin like Rabbi Shimon that you're allowed to sweep, you're allowed to sweep. So then it's not. Why would one permit sweeping? What happened to the muktzah concern? Isn't that a real concern? How can anyone ever argue with that concern? So one could respond to that concern by saying that maybe the things that are on the floor fall into the category of what's called the graf shorei. Graf shorei means like a little bedpan. You have something very dirty and smelly that disgusts you. So the Gemara says in Shabbos and the Beitza that you're allowed to move a graf sharei on Shabbos, even though it's mukta. Let's say you find a dead mouse in the living room on Shabbos, so you're going to go nuts. It's going to bother you to look at. It's going to grow. It's going to smell. It's disgusting you. So the din is, even though it's mamish mukta, what do you do with it? It's mukta mamish. You're allowed to pick it up and throw it out, dispose of it. So whatever is considered to be a graf sharei is mukta. It could be that a person walks into the house on Shabbos, on Shabbos, and they see all the dirty peels and the garbage from last night's meal, they're going to go nuts. And that becomes a graf sharei. And even if some of you may not go nuts, then maybe other people in the family may go nuts. Maybe that's also called a graf sharei. It's called shalom bayis. You never know what it is. So if one of the members of your family considers it to be repulsive, so then that's takes on the category, so to speak, of a graf sharei. So back to the story, we still don't have absolute clarity upon sweeping floors on Shabbos. That's the bad news. The good news is that we don't live on dirt floors. Most of us hopefully live on, except maybe on the sukkah sometimes, we live on carpet floors or wooden floors or tiling floors. So is any of this discussion even relevant for us? So it depends what you think the discussion is. If you think the discussion is a muksa discussion, so then it's relevant for us also. If you think that it's a bonus shaila, and presumably it's not relevant for us. I said presumably because I'm going to backtrack on that in a moment. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara and the Rishonim, Poskim and Shulchan Aruch about the following. What if I personally don't have a dirt floor? Everybody else has a dirt floor, but I personally don't have a dirt floor. So this touches on a more global kind of a question about low plugs. Chazal sometimes make a gezeira, don't do this, and it happens to be a finagle reason, and it doesn't apply to me. So very often we find that Chazal make gezeiras across the board. We can't set up a system where some people are doing one thing, other people are doing another thing. It doesn't work. We've seen it time and time again. You have systems, you have public areas, where half the people are doing one thing, half the people are doing something else. It doesn't work in halacha. It doesn't work in the world today. It just doesn't work. So you have to have certain universal rules, even though, quite frankly, it may not apply to one person. It's possible, it's very, very possible that the particular gezeira doesn't apply to me. But it doesn't matter. The Gemara has a phrase for that. The Gemara says in Sefer Pesachim, that as an Issa de Rabbanon, when you bake, let's say you want to bake matzahs on Pesach, so as an Issa de Rabbanon, when you're dealing with the dough, to make nice little forms. You want to make with bakers, want to make nice little shaped cookies, want to make nice little forms out of the dough. So you're not allowed to do that when you bake on Pesach. Why? Because that takes an extra couple of minutes to finagle to make it nice. So with the process, the whole dough is going to become chametz. So even if you do it carefully, chazam and gzeid rabbanon and osim tsrikim to your own Pesach. Now let him make nice shaped kinds of dough. You just take your plop of dough and make it a matzah quickly. Now let him shape it up and work on it a little bit as a gzeira may become chametz. So the Gemara tells a story that there was one person whose name is Baitus. Baitusim were a bad group of people. They were the upper class. This was a nice guy. He was a baker. So there's a guy by the name of Baitus, and he asked the chachamim that. He said, I'm a professional baker, this is what I do all day. I could make a gingerbread man. I can make a matzah man. I could do it faster than I'll take the other guy to make a whole matzah. So I can do it 2 seconds, a chick-chack. For me, nothing's going to happen. It's going to be fine. So the Gemara responded to him. The Chazal responded and said, Yoimru kol hasriken asurin usriken baisos mutarin. He said, you're going to tell the Olam that everybody else is gingerbread man or usher because they're not as experts as Baitas is. Whereas Baitas, so he's going to be mutter. It's not going to work that way. What's going to happen? So this year, Baitas is going to get away with it because he does a good job. Next year, the other guy down the block is going to say, I'm just as good as Baitas. And the next year, the next guy, and by the time we get to the 16th guy, he's not as good as Baitas. And he's putting out chametz out of his gingerbread man. So therefore, we have to apply a little plug. We have lace bread, no choice. So Chazal have this idea. This again is a very common, scenario. I remember it was somewhat of a not humorous because this whole pasha is not humorous, but it was said in a somewhat humorous way. I was back in the summer, so we went away for a couple of days to some place in New Hampshire. So there were very, very limited places at the time to go. So we went to this place and we came to the advertising the Minyan there. And it was advertised that the Minyan is masks and social distancing, you know, and there's going to be a Kedasa Chedin. It's advertised that way. Didn't see what the advertiser was, what the Maisa was. Remember, it was a Sunday night. We walked in, you know, new crowds were coming, new people coming all the time. So remember, the Gabbai gets up in the Minyan, the first Mincha. Yes, because he sees there are some people who are coming in somehow didn't know how to read signs and didn't know that didn't know what the rules are and didn't understand that it said in all letters that in English, Hebrew, Yiddish, every possible language anyone in that community would read. It said Pemoli, you have to wear masks and then somehow whatever reason not everyone knew how to read. So the Gabbai got up and he said, listen, he said, whatever you want to do in your house, do in your house. Whatever you want to do back here, let me tell you the rules here. He said, I don't want to hear you have antibodies. I don't want to hear your uncle has antibodies. I don't want to hear your third cousin has antibodies. I said, is it lo echpatli? He said, I don't care. I said, you're in my place. You put on a mask. That's what he said. So remember that. So at the time, I turned to my son. I said, that's the Gemara. I said, Yom Rusrike Baitas Mutarim Chol Asrike Nasur. The one guy who just had COVID last week, he's probably right. It could be Nasri the Rebbe. But you can't have a system. You can't have a system like that. So it's a light plug across the board. So that's what the Rishayim discussed. That when it comes to the sweeping the floor. So if you really hold that the issue of the sweeping floor is only with mukta, it has to do with malacha. So, but I don't have a dirt floor. So for me, it should be okay. So that's very, very shaky because we're going to let you sweep. And then your neighbor comes to you for lunch. Is he going to realize, oh, the rabbi said you can sweep. He's not going to help. This guy doesn't have a dirt floor. The other guy doesn't have a dirt floor. So somebody should say, that makes sense. That's if most people in town don't have tiles on the floor. Most people talk to have dirt floors. But you live in a place where everybody has tiles. The whole town is tiles. Who in Bergenfield has a dirt floor in their living room? I hope not anybody. You live in a place where everybody has tiles. Everyone has carpet. Everyone has wood. Everyone has something else. Nobody has dirt floors anymore. So maybe there's no gazer. Maybe taka bechia gavin a low goes through. That's a further shayla. So a lot of these shayas are all going to converge together in terms of practically taka slamaisa. Is it permissible to sweep the floor in Shabbos or not? So hopefully mitzvah next week. Hang in there for one more week. And if you see your wife sweeping the tiles next week, don't worry. She has what to rely on. So hopefully mitzvah we'll see next week. that with the final touches on you're allowed to sweep the floors in Bisman Hazeh, you're not allowed to sweep. Do we still have to worry a cheshire of the mukta issue? Are the differences what kind of brooms we're using? A couple of other factors here and there that may potentially impact on the shayla. So we'll try to put the final touches on the sweeping of the floor next week, which will if I'm not mistaken, I think we'll even finish up Malachas Bainan. So I think that's if I'm not mistaken, we'll see. Famous last words. We'll see if we can finish off Malachas by now from the Shem. Okay. I assume the time will be the same.